Good morning, and thanks for joining us today, Wednesday, March 13th. This is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY, and I'm Susie Prez, one of the hosts this morning, and I have a co-host. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm Chris Bessler over here, your co-host. How are you doing this morning, Susie?
I'm good. I looked outside early enough to shovel off my car, so I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, here it is. What are we at? March 13th, and we're still getting some snow. Good news for skiers, right?
I bet it's beautiful up there. Absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a great snow day yesterday. Hey, we have a good show today. We're going to be talking first with Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. He's going to be talking to us, giving his deep insights into the results of the school levy election, which, not to hold anybody in suspense, it passed yesterday with about 56% voting in favor of it. But there are a lot of things to dissect there. So, Cameron, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, good morning, Cameron.
Second half of the show?
Well, we're going to have a recorded interview with Forest Bird Charter School Administrator Mary Jensen, Principal Jennifer Grieve, and Social Studies teacher Todd Klaunch. And they're going to be giving us an overview of the school, updates, important things that have happened, and what they're looking forward to, and also enrollment application due dates. So that will be a recorded interview about half past the hour. And when you're listening to this, and if you have to run out to work, don't forget you can always go to our website, krfy.org, in the podcast page, and we save these. We record our interviews on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning. So you can go there and hear it later at your leisure.
Yeah, click on that podcast link to hear this. Should you ever miss this exciting show, you can go there and get a copy. So Susie, we're talking a little bit about the weather. What's going on out there? What can we expect the next few days?
Well, right now they're saying from the National Weather Service we have 28 degrees, which is kind of nice. It's kind of good. Today, let's see, a 30 to 20% chance of rain, snow, and areas of freezing fog, a high of 40 degrees. Tonight, areas of freezing fog, no precipitation, but a low of 23. And tomorrow, no precipitation, again, freezing fog, and then partly sunny, a high of 40. And Thursday night, a low of 22. And it looks like it's that partly sunny, little bit of clouds, but the temperature is going way up, and I'm looking at Monday during the day, 52, Sunday, 48, and partly sunny with a little bit of rain, maybe.
Yeah, that's sounding more like spring right there, isn't it? A couple other things going on outside. Sunrise this morning was at 7:05 a.m. It'll set tonight at 6:46 p.m. Because the days are getting longer over the course of the past week, we've gained 24 minutes of daylight per day. Of course, our mornings are a little darker now because we had the shift to daylight savings time. So it makes it a little harder to get up in the morning for some of us that are activated by sunlight. Other things going on outside, we're getting a waxing crescent moon right now. And if you do catch some night sky, if you get a break in the clouds, there's a red star beside it, and that's Mars. That's just to the below it, to the south of it. And if you look up in the sky shortly after sunset, you can see the waxing crescent moon and Mars. First quarter moon will be Thursday. Up at Schweitzer, this snow is good news for them. They got 10 inches over the last 24 hours. So they're predicting powder skiing conditions today. They're getting a great long season up there. So
I'm not hearing any complaints from the skiers
from skiers.
They had a good ski year, and it continues.
It sure does. What else is going on around town before we turn to the news of the day?
Well, you tell me, Chris.
Well, St. Paddy's Day is coming up. It's on Sunday. You're not Irish, are you, Cameron?
No, I'm not, I'm afraid. But I have enjoyed a few St. Paddy's Days in my time.
And yes, the green beer, right?
Yeah.
So there are things going on around town in association with that. Sandpoint's eating and drinking establishments are having all kinds of different Irish-themed meals and beer drinking and so on and so forth. So it's this weekend.
It's an
Friday,
excuse,
Saturday, Sunday.
Right?
What's that?
It's an excuse for good Irish food and good Irish ale, things like that. Maybe even some Irish whiskey. I don't know if Irish has whiskey.
Yeah. There are a few.
You bet there is, indeed. There's a ton of other things going on around town as usual. No huge events other than St. Paddy's Day, but there's going to be a shooting range grand opening at Wrinkle Arms. That's kind of a interesting new development here in town that we're going to have a big new shooting range. That's on Saturday.
In fact, I just talked with the owner, and we'll have a little something about it in this week's reader.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of folks that are into shooting sports that are going to really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we've got the outdoor range north of town, but that's closed for a good chunk of the year during the winter. So this will be something for people to enjoy all year round.
Yeah. So did you check the shooting range out?
Unfortunately, I couldn't because I ended up being pressed for time, but I really wanted to. I wanted to see if I could take my own gun out and see how my aim is holding up. But
it deteriorates with age, Cameron.
You know? And lack of practice, which I need to be better about.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, from the standpoint City Minute that we've initiated here at the Wednesday Morning Show, I heard from Jennifer Stapleton yesterday, and she wanted folks to know that they are holding a development roundtable discussion today, Wednesday, March 13th, from 4 to 6 at the Council Chamber. Also, want to remind you that the City of Sandpoint has a really cool app you can put on your devices. It's called Engage Sandpoint. You can report issues, find resources, and stay informed. You can call the city to find out more at 208-263-3158. And also, I actually picked this up on Facebook from the reader, but it's directly from the city about today's road conditions. They are putting out a bulletin, I would guess you'd say. Roads are extremely slick this morning. If you can avoid travel until later in the day, please do so. Use extreme caution, especially at intersections and roundabouts. Crews are actively sanding, and we will continue to reapply throughout the day. That's from the City of Sandpoint as of this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say at the beginning of this show, and I'm going to try to announce it at the end, tomorrow morning, Jim Healy will have Dino Wall from the Festival at Sandpoint on air. And as we know, they've been announcing some of the lineup already. Recently, they announced that Jackson Browne will be on Saturday night, August 3rd. The headliner, that's big, with a big band and everything. Pretty big show right there. And Dino wanted everyone to know that tomorrow on the morning show, they'll be doing ticket giveaways. So,
there's a good reason to tune in right there.
Uh-huh.
To get a ticket.
I don't know for what, but
they've announced three acts so far, and they're all great ones. So
it's the Avett Brothers.
Yes.
Jackson Browne. I don't know the third one.
That's Walk Off the Earth, which is a kind of a folk. They do some really hilarious songs as well, but they're really good musicians. They're from Canada. So that's one I want to catch as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Shook Twins are opening for them.
That's right.
That will be really fun.
The
we
Shook
love
Twins
that.
Are the second act there. I wanted to mention one more thing that's going on. It's happening actually right now. Burlington, there's a public hearing on the proposed second rail bridge that Burlington Northern Santa Fe wants to build across Lake Pend'Oreille. It's happening at 8 a.m. today, but again at 6 p.m. today, at the Pend'Oreille Events Center on 401 Bonner Mall Way, that's in Pend'Oreille. And the Coast Guard is conducting this, and they're taking comments. So if you have an interest or concern about the second bridge that's proposed to be built across the lake, then go there tonight at 6 p.m. That's the hearing for the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Rail Expansion Project at the Pend'Oreille Events Center. And you can catch all these events, if you go to the krfy.org website and click on the community calendars, they're provided by Sandpoint Online. There's a ton of other things going on in town, as always. So you can get details on all those on the website.
That's very cool. Good job. So should we get to the big news of the day?
The news of the day. So, Cameron, we had Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. We had an election for Lake Pend'Oreille School District school levy yesterday. Tell us what happened.
Well, I suppose that people who were fans of how the school district has been operating are happy today because, once again, the levy is passed. Now, it passed by a narrower margin. than previous years. And I think you can probably attribute that to the fact that Lake Pend'Oreille School District was asking for a fairly substantial increase to the levy, which replaced the previous levy of about $17 million over 2 years. This one's over, I believe, $25 million over 2 years. So, you know, that's about a, you know, $7 million increase right there.
Yeah. And they were proposing the larger increase primarily because they wanted to increase the salary scale.
Yes.
The wages and salaries paid to teachers as well as other school staff.
Right. And according to Sean Woodward, and this is a problem, I guess, a longstanding problem that I have heard of with the school district and schools in general, particularly here in the Panhandle, is just teacher retention. Mostly because, you know, you can have a teacher come in to take a job here, and they'll get a few years of experience, and, well, you know, just a short distance away are Washington schools, where Washington does have a record of, or they do tend to pay their teachers a fair bit more than Idaho schools do. So, you know, it's a tempting thing to get a few years of experience and then jump to a job where you can make several thousand dollars more a year.
Yeah. And as speaking of the levy election and Superintendent Sean Woodward, we asked him for a comment, and he was able to email us something early this morning. This is a comment from Sean Woodward. Quote, "We are thrilled with the results of the levy election. Our community believes in the work we are doing to support kids and families. We are so grateful and thankful that our community shows such great support for public education. We do not take this responsibility lightly, and we will continue to work hard to maintain trust and to ensure high levels of learning for all of our students." And that's our superintendent of schools, Sean Woodward. Of course, they're very happy that the voters approved this levy. And, you know, although everything really comes down on Sean because he's the point guy, he's the superintendent of schools, really the decision to go for these things comes from the school board of trustees, mm-hmm. who are elected folks.
Yes.
And we had Geraldine Lewis in a week ago, and she talked a little bit about, you know, what the reasons the school board decided to put the levy forward at this higher rate, and it really came down, the big difference was those salaries, as you just addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that brings those salaries into, as you said, Cameron, competitive, so people, good teachers, stay. The other thing I think that was interesting, and maybe we'll get into this now or later, is the idea of we're already paying for a levy. So what this increased levy that just passed looks like, if your home is worth, I don't know, $250,000, and that's your base for your property taxes, it really only adds $7 a month to that already levy, just under $7. And I was thinking a couple of lattes, really, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's per $250,000 of home valuation with a homeowner's exemption. So, you know, people whose homes are valued more, they're going to pay a little bit more. People whose homes are valued less, they'll pay a little bit less.
And that's under $7 per month. So what, $84 a year to help our schools be more competitive and vibrant. And
you know, for some people, that's going to be no big deal. You know, yeah. $7 a month. You know, for others, I guess, I did hear from some people who are on fixed incomes, and you know, that any kind of increase is chipping away at what they have available for, you know, other expenses. So
yeah, that's true. And we can just take a guess that that was a primary motivator for people who voted no.
Yeah.
I do know that the county has I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but it's a way for people on fixed incomes to have their taxes, their property taxes reduced due to a low income. So they might check with the county, Bonner County. Mm-hmm. There's an application fee, but it's based on your yearly income.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take a look at how the results broke out. Again, it passed with a 56.2% voting in favor. But the overall number of votes cast was actually well down from the levy election in 2 years ago. The total votes cast this time were 6,034, 2 years ago in March of 2017, when the levy was up for election then, there was a total of 7,700 and almost 7,800 people who cast votes in that election. Mm-hmm. Now, we can take a guess why that was, but my primary guess would say weather.
Well, yeah. That's entirely possible. It definitely wasn't the nicest day out that particular day.
Yeah.
And I know that this is totally unscientific, but throughout the entire process of, reporting on this story, and we published a lot of letters in the Reader and that sort of thing, I don't know, I just didn't see as much energy out there this year as I've seen in previous levy elections. And that's just my sense of things, and, maybe you have a different opinion if you've been spending a lot of time on the Facebook forums, where people tend to get pretty impassioned, but I just didn't see as much energy on either side as I have in previous elections, and that's kind of a wild thing.
Yeah. Something else that's interesting here, though I suppose you'd say it's not unexpected, is the divide in the vote between the precincts that are more urban, if you will. We're in a little tiny town, but we still have an urban area. And the rural precincts. If you take a look at the precincts that are in town, like the Baldy precinct, the vote was 299 in favor, 99 opposed. So that's a 3-1 margin there in favor of it. The Washington precinct, where Washington School is, actually, it's 451 in favor to 134 opposed. So it's better than 3-1. The Airport precinct, which reaches out a little bit more into the rural area, still a 2-1 margin there, 246 in favor and 134 opposed. But then you take a look at the some of the rural precincts, and it was just a complete flip-flop. Kerrywood, there was only 27 in favor versus 117 opposed. So that's about a 4-1 margin there. Kokalala, that precinct, there were 31 in favor, but 111 opposed. Westman, 89 in favor, 178 opposed. Southside, 82 in favor, 151 opposed. So the split there is 2-1 against it in those rural precincts.
Right, right. And which is a very interesting point because, baked within the levy are the funds to operate those rural schools. And so, you could argue that the rural locations would be the first to suffer if the levy didn't pass.
So, Cameron, you've been studying this a long time. Why do you think that is? It's almost the opposite of what you think.
Well, in the rural. I think it bakes down to a relatively simple, reality of the ideological makeup of our county. And the folks over there in those rural districts tend to be more conservative, more philosophically opposed to taxes, and especially tax increases. And so among many, many conservative people, this was not a popular thing. It's a pretty substantial increase. So,
yeah, in general, they just are skeptical of government and the funding of government. They just as soon keep government services, I guess, at a minimum. I don't know if they keep the services at a minimum. They certainly want to keep the taxes paid to government at a minimum. Mm-hmm. One interesting reaction that I saw was out on the interwebs, of course, on the social media, was a lot of people saying, well, the district is threatening the rural districts that they're going to close these schools if this doesn't pass. It's just a threat. So they didn't really believe that the district would act to close these outlying schools if the levy failed. But the levy composes about a third of the total budget. And just realistically, there are going to have to be teachers laid off. They're going to have to consolidate schools. If they lose a third of their funding, they were projecting they were going to lose 300 positions, full and part-time positions would have to be laid off. And it kind of leads you to believe if that's the real result of losing that much money, they're going to have to take some cost-saving measures that include closing those rural schools.
Yeah, yeah. It's important to remember that a third of the district's operating budget comes from this levy. And so if you're given the option between closing a school in a rural outlying area or a school in a population base, I think you're going to go for the option that affects the fewest people. And unfortunately, that means that the rural schools get hit.
And when you're talking about budgets, a lot of folks in some of those letters that were in the Sandpoint Reader asked, why does the levy have to be in March? Why can't it be later? Well, it has to do with budgets and contracts and renewal contracts for teachers. If they had to lay off a bunch of people, it would have been, they had to let them know ahead of time. But fortunately, the levy passed. At least that's what the school district's happy about. I'm sure they're not there cutting right now, doing budget work.
Yeah.
They can plan.
So one, another trend we saw, although the turnout was substantially lower, probably the weather was part of that, but another trend we saw that was a pretty significant decline in the margin. 2 years ago, on the March 14th, 2017, levy, the percentage in favor was 64% and 36% opposed. This time we had 56% in favor and about 43-point-something% opposed. So what does your crystal ball tell you? Are we lining up to see more problematic passing for these sorts of levies in the future?
I mean, I think that depends on what the school district does. There are, you know, it's important to remember that voters have not always approved requests from the district. We had that plant levy, which was intended to replace a few school facilities in the area, and that failed. That was a very expensive, I mean, that was a lot of money that they were asking, millions and millions of dollars. I can't remember the exact figure off the top.
50 million.
It was 50 million. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a big ask right there. Yeah.
And that was in addition to the a new levy in addition to the supplemental levy.
That was on top of what we are paying in the supplemental levy taxes. And so, it's a substantial amount of money, and the voters just weren't having it there. You know, you can read into that and say, well, you know, voters have a long, long record here of passing these supplemental levies, but I think that there is a threshold at which point a lot of people get peeled off from the yes and say, no, enough is enough, I can't do anymore, and they side with the no crowd. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it is worth mentioning, 6 years ago, that's three levy elections ago, it passed as well with a smaller margin, 58%. So it had dipped down, the support for the levy had dipped down, and then the two subsequent levy elections of that, it came up over 60% in favor each time. Mm-hmm. This time it's dipped back down. We can take a guess that that's, you know, the weather's suppressed the turnout, so that might have been one factor. The fact that it was a higher levy ask this time is another. And you mentioned the plant facility levy, which they tried 3 years ago now, I think
it was
and it failed rather by a pretty stiff margin. And it was a big ask because they were trying to replace a couple of schools and do a lot of maintenance on the schools. That maintenance and the need of some of these older schools to be replaced isn't just going to go away.
No. And that was the argument at the time, was like, we can do this now, but it's just going to get more expensive down the road. So
there is a committee. It's got over 20 members on it. That's the school district's been working hard to get a broad representation of philosophical perspectives onto the committee. I don't know how successful they have been in getting that broad spectrum, because more conservative people have not been participating. But there is a committee that is looking at what are we going to do with the facility needs. And one of the arguments against this levy, this supplemental levy, is that they're going to turn back around. There's been an engineering study that's identified $39 million in need. The committee's made no no decisions at all. They've only met twice, according to Sean Woodward and Geraldine Lewis, who spoke with us last week. They've only met a couple times now to talk about how should we approach this. And I think what they learned in the failure of the last plant facility levy election is that asking for all that in one fell swoop is probably going to be a non-starter.
Mm-hmm.
So they're more likely to come back and on a school-by-school basis and ask for funds to prepare specific schools.
Right.
Some schools in the state of Idaho had a levy, as we did here, but their levy was to make it permanent. Do you know anything about that?
Well, this is an option that the school board has, but they have chosen time and time again to not pursue it. you can put a vote forward that asks the voters to make this levy permanent. And it's an interesting fact that in school districts in other states, they don't even have this as a part of a voter-approved initiative. I mean, you have school taxes that are just baked in locally to the tax structure. So, the school district does have kind of a, you know, challenge every 2 years to say, hey, this is what we want, and we really are asking you to approve this for us. But at the same time, you can also say that that does improve transparency. It does force motivate school officials to get out into the public and say, you know, we're proud of the work that we're doing. We think we're doing a good job for you, and we think that we deserve to have more local funding for all of the education that we're, you know, providing this community.
Do you have any figures on what the cost to put a levy together for the school district is?
I wouldn't know anything like that. It doesn't obviously involve a significant amount of staff time.
Right.
So, you know, you can imagine how many hours that administrators like Sean Woodward and you know, the financial team and
Lisa Halls.
Yeah, Lisa Halls, who's basically the chief financial officer for the school district. So, yeah, they put in a lot of time.
And it's part of their job.
Yeah, it is part of their job. But, it's significant in terms of man hours, which is money. So,
and that rolls around every 2 years, that the big chunk of time from our administrators and from the community itself goes into these levy elections, these levy requests, and all the arguing that goes on. It's some ways it's nonsensical that we have to do this every 2 years when such a big percentage of the school's operating budget actually derives from this levy election. You think there'd be a more permanent solution to that. But on the other side, you can see the argument that, well, this gives the voters the ability to say yay or nay on a case-by-case basis. I did want to mention that over on the west side, the West Bonner School District 83, they did not have success last night. Their proposed supplemental levy election failed. And the vote there was 769 opposed, 536 in favor. So the West Bonner School District, which is Priest River, basically, it did not pass their levy election. It was also a replacement levy, far smaller. Their current levy is $2.2 million, and their ask this time was for a $3 million per year levy, and that's what the voters turned down. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. That's a much smaller school district. I'm not well versed in the issues there. Were you covering that at all?
I didn't cover that really to any significant degree. But once again, you do have in those more rural areas a real difficulty in getting these local taxes for education passed.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of that. So they'll be grappling with what to do there. You know, they do get another chance to asked for a new, they could come back and ask for the same levy again, or they could revise the request and put it up to the voters a second time. I think they can do that again in May, if I remember correctly.
That is correct.
And well, any concluding thoughts? We're going to have to move on to our, we have another segment coming on, a whole new subject shortly. We're going to be talking about the Forest Bird Charter School.
I guess I would just end on how interesting it is in terms of what a major effort it is to get these school levies passed, because it's not just the types of people, the parents and the people that have a vested interest in these, extracurricular programs and all these things that the levy funds. You know, it's not just them that's interested in it. You have a lot of people in local business here, and a lot of people in tourism and things like that, and just trying to promote Sandpoint, that really put a strong emphasis in supporting the local schools, because that's one of the things that attracts people here, the fact that we have a good school district. And, a lot of people do make the argument that if we, you know, don't pass these local taxes and the quality of local education goes downhill, that's a lot of lost interest from, like, companies that are looking to move here, individuals that are looking to move here and maybe work remotely. It's just another factor in the whole thing. So,
very good point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to The Morning Show. We're talking with Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. You're the editor, and we've just disseminated the school levy vote. We broke it down. And yeah. Cameron, I wondered, you probably didn't stay up all night like you do for the general elections and the primaries.
No, I did not. And that's mostly because I have I'm getting extra money for the general elections. So if you guys want me to stay up all night, you got to find a way to pay me.
There you go.
That's because you string for the wire service.
The Associated Press.
Associated Press.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, and have a beautiful day getting ready for the Sandpoint Reader that comes out tomorrow.
All right. Well, thank you.
Every time. And we're going to go to a recorded interview. Chris, you and I had the opportunity to sit down with Administrator Mary Jensen, Principal Jennifer Grieve, and Social Studies teacher Todd Klontsch on March 4th from the Forest Bird Charter School, talking about overview, updates, important enrollment dates, things to remember, and really an overview of the school. So here we are. We'd love to present this to you. We'll be back right at the end of the hour, or at least I will, to give you a bit more information about what's going on in town. But right now, here's our interview with the Forest Bird Charter School. Welcome, Mary Jensen, Administrator, and Jennifer Greaves, Principal, and Todd Klontsch, Social Studies, from the Forest Bird Charter School. Thank you for coming to the KRFY recording studio today to bring us up to date on what is happening at Forest Bird and to clarify a few terms and principles that distinguish the charter school here in Sandpoint from the school district. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
For our new listeners, give us a short introduction to the Forest Bird Charter School.
Hi, Susie. I'd love to just say that we've been around since 2001. Forest Bird was one of the first charter schools in Idaho to come around. We're grades 6 through 12, serving predominantly this school district, but we also have students from the Boundary County School District that come down to us. We have about, I'm going to look to Mary, 340 students at this point in time. She's nodding. Our focus tends to be project-based education, which means giving students projects and experiences to tie to the learning, so they better remember the information and have real-life experiences to attach why this learning is important. And then I would say at our high school, the next level is also a mastery project-based, where they're taking all their information from classes in the fall and winter, creating projects on their own to demonstrate that learning. And then we also incorporate a lot of dual enrollment with the colleges around here. Have I missed anything, Mary?
I think Also, for the high school, we offer that the dual enrollment classes with the colleges can happen when the kids are ready. So we have about 4 students every year that graduate with an associate's degree before they graduate with their high school diploma. It's only a week, but it's kind of fun to say.
Jennifer, you mentioned that terms used at the charter school, such as application and open enrollment, can sometimes lead people to believe that the charter school is private and only selected students get in. Mm-hmm. Can you expand on that?
Sure. What happens, and this is stated by Idaho code for any charter school, they have to open up an enrollment period. We tend to do our enrollment period. It's open right now, February through March, so we can get projections on numbers for students. And all it really means is that we have this window that anybody who wants to come to the school comes down, fills out an application, which is just basic information, anything that you would do at any school. And then at the end of our enrollment period, those students, if they get into our school, and I can explain that in a second, they just get the paperwork then after that. There's no questions on how were your test scores or where are you, you know, coming from as a good student or any of those things. It's just so we have a name and a family attached to it. What I mean about if they get in is that because we're a small school, one of the things that law says is that we can state we're only going to have 38 sixth graders. So I can only take that many students. And so if I have 39 to 48 applications, anything over that 38, those students' names go in a hat, and we draw their names out. And that's how the state dictated that it would be the most fair, that it's not a picking and choosing of students. It is a literal lottery of names.
So have you encountered that need to do a lottery?
Yeah, Mary and I were just speaking about this morning. The last 3 years, we have had to do a lottery for students for the seats that we have available because we had a lot of people applying, which was wonderful.
Does this tend to go by grade? Some grades are more crowded than others.
Yeah, it does. I think that in the middle school, we see sixth grade is a high percentage. We'll see towards the end, we might see more students in seventh grade. And I'm looking at Mary to confirm that possibly ninth grade in our high school might have more applications.
So generally, when they come into the high school, they stay in the high school. So we don't have a lot of new applications. Grades 10 through 12, they usually migrate. The migration of students from 8th grade to 9th grade, that high school, middle school year, the students may discover that the learning style, which is project-based learning at the school, doesn't meet their needs. They may move on, which opens up some spaces in the 9th grade. This year, we have about 10 spaces in the 9th grade because the majority of our students in 8th grade moves on. So what we've been noticing the last few years is that more applicants come into the 8th grade hoping to retain their spot for the high school as well.
Yeah, so it sounds like the for parents, if they get their kids started earlier, looking down the road where their kid might want to come in later, it's advantageous in case they miss the lottery 1 year.
That's correct, because once they are in the school, they don't have to reapply. They just move to grade level.
You mentioned that open enrollment is now open for next year. And how do parents find out the difference between getting their child into the charter school? What motivates them? Or how do they find out? Do you have open houses so that they can really understand sort of the different components? You mentioned project-based and mastery-based in the high school ways of looking at education. So how do parents get informed about that?
Well, I will say our biggest advertisement are our current parents. Our parents love to share their experiences with people in the community. So we'll have a lot of people coming in saying, so-and-so told me about your school. I wanted to come find out about it. There's a lot of information on our website as well that they can go to. That's forestbirdcharterschool.org. And I think the next thing is once people start really deciding, are they curious about us, we set tours up with families. Any family can call us and come on down and we'll schedule a time that they can tour the school, ask us questions. And then we also have opportunities for their student to shadow another student for the day. We've learned that the best way for people to really understand what we're doing is to come and experience it. And by the end of a day, a student who might have said, oh, I don't know, by the end of that shadow day, they're coming home going, yeah, that's where I want to be.
Do you find that the charter school really meets certain types of students, certain ways of learning, learning styles better than other students? And we can hear from Todd, a teacher.
Hello. No, I don't. I think we do a very good job at hitting a lot of different types and styles of student. Because we're diving deeper into information with our projects, the way they get to that information is very different. You can have some visual learners, some kinesthetic learners. You can have all different types of learning styles and teach within that. And I find it, one, it's super challenging as a teacher to try to address information and material and content in different ways. But when you see students getting the same information through different means, it's pretty exciting. Not everybody is a great writer. Not everybody is great at building things. And so it takes a lot of different skills to pull that off.
But Todd, I'm a little curious about your background. Have you taught in public schools before? And what would the difference be with the charter school?
Early on, I taught in public schools, but that was back in 1999. I've been at the charter school for 15 years, and I was at a private school for 3. And I apologize.
How would you compare the learning and teaching methods at the charter school to the public school?
Well, I come from a lecture background, and I love to be up in front of a class talking. And charter school is very different than that. While I still have spots where I can lecture, a lot of this is facilitated learning to hit the different styles. And so that takes me out from the front of the class and puts me in the middle of the class. And just helping kids and guiding questions and discussions for various topics.
I also worked in a traditional school system until I moved here. Actually, I'm from Montana, and charter schools are not allowed in Montana. So when I moved here, I didn't even know what a charter school was, but it was the job opening, so I jumped on it and learned very quickly. One of the things that I noticed between the traditional school system and the public charter school that we work at now is the ability to connect with our students. We're purposely a small school, so all the teachers can have a personal connection with the students. We found that knowing what's going on in their lives and understanding their family dynamics builds a relationship with the student where they want to do more for us and learn more from us because they trust the people that they are learning from.
Mary, you made a comment that in Montana, charter schools aren't allowed.
No.
But charter schools are common in a lot of states, right? Mm-hmm. The majority of states even have charter schools now?
Yes. Montana is one of those few outliers. I think there's only a handful of states that don't allow charter schools in them. So Montana is the last holdout. Montana, they felt that their educational system was very strong, that they didn't feel that they needed a charter school system. And it is anticipated within the next couple of years, perhaps they'll relook at charter schools, but they have been voted down in their legislature for quite some time.
Just to delve a little bit deeper into, we have a charter school here. It's been around for quite a while. What kind of regulations and oversight is there? Who regulates the charter school? Is it independent and it just answers to the state education board? Or is it the public school district that oversees? And how does that work?
Well, we always laugh that for us, we're a little bit different, even more so than in the land of different charter schools. Many of the charter schools in Idaho answer to the Idaho Charter School Commission, which is in Boise. They are their overseers. They're the ones who look at their audits. They're the ones who make sure they're meeting standards, that make sure they're completing testing, and monitor their progress. Mary and I, and I think our teachers, feel very fortunate that we have kept such a wonderful collaborative relationship with the local district, that Lake Pendere School Board is our oversight. And while we are not part of their district, their board are the ones who keep an eye on us. Sean Woodward, Lisa Halls, their whole board has been really great in working with Mary and I. They check our audits and our budgets. They look at our curriculum. We give them reports on our progress, our test scores. We also give them, Mary's been working very hard in our school with a planning committee for our future. We share those ideas with them. So they are the ones that really kind of come around and check out on us and see what we're doing.
One of the innovative things the school district did just a couple of years ago, they started what they call the Homeschool Academy. Mm-hmm. Are you connected with that? Or do you see children coming into the charter school that are coming from a homeschool background?
Oh, yes. Many of our students come into the charter school from the homeschool backgrounds. We were fortunate to have share some ideas with Sean Woodward when he first came up with the idea of the Homeschool Academy. Which is a fantastic idea. But we don't have, because we're in two different districts, we don't have anything other than shared some input when he first put it into place.
You mentioned the public school. What about funding? Are you hooked in with the public school, the Lake Pendere School District, as far as funding? And with the new funding formula that the state is looking at right now, it may have gotten to the House floor today. To see about that, that's a 3-year project. Mm-hmm. How does your funding work, and how will the new funding formula work for you?
What a fun question. That's like my part of the school, and I just love it.
Mary loves budget.
So we are not a district. We're called an LEA. And so because we are our own LEA, we have our own funding through the state, which is close to like 97% of our money is the state funding. The rest is mainly federal funding. We do not share money with Lake Pendere School District, nor do they share with us. We used to years ago, but when we became and petitioned to be our own LEA, we got separate funding sources. As for the new funding model, which has been a very interesting roller coaster to watch and participate in, the outlook on that is that we will not lose or gain money from the new funding model. And it will be really interesting, since with the new funding model, the money follows the kid directly throughout the school year. So sometimes our enrollment goes up in the school year, sometimes it goes down. So we would just have to anticipate possibly a down, hoping it never happens, right? But we always anticipate lower at our school, so we're never in the hole or in trouble. And it's just a different look for funding in the state. I do know that there's been some controversy on the new funding model on public schools losing a lot of money, especially the bigger ones, but that's not going to be the case for the smaller school like us.
The levy vote that's coming up on March 12th will not affect the Forest Bird.
Exactly. Charter schools are not to levy or bond in Idaho, so we receive no monies from a bond or levy done by Lake Pendere School District.
So how's the school year going this year?
The year's going really well. Kids are great. I really enjoy what I'm teaching. I'm right in the middle of my favorite thing, which is mock trials. And, you know, so far the school year is great. It's stressful, but it's really going good.
One question. You've been doing this for quite a while. It sounds like 15 years in the charter school.
Yes, ma'am.
What have you seen? How have you seen the students change in those 15 years? Because humans evolve, and I'm sure you see it in the classroom.
You know, the changes are less dramatic if you go year to year as opposed to when I started and now. But I'm certainly, I've seen that students are more willing to talk about some controversial things that 10, 15 years ago they weren't or wouldn't have been. The subjects we address are a wide variety, and a lot of it, you know, comes from what's going on in the community. A lot of it comes from what's going on in the state. But to be honest, a ton of it's coming from what's going on in our political climate of today. And, I've never had to teach the Emoluments Clause before, and or never had to really, really explain it like I do this year, which has been kind of a change. And talking about how we talk to each other and how we disagree with each other in a way that everybody can hear it is kind of been a change, because we're not seeing that from the top.
And we're certainly in a very charged political climate now.
Yes.
I assume that's spilling over to the what happens in the classroom.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you teach just civil discourse as a foundation of good governance?
With a lot of patience. I think you go back to the relationships. And if you have relationships with each of the kids, even if they don't have relationships with each other, you can model appropriate behavior and see some results, based on the relationships that you've built with children.
Do you have exercises where the kids might come in with a certain point of view or have an assignment to defend a certain point of view and exchange with the other side?
Well, every couple of weeks we do what I call current events, where students bring in some kind of debatable topic, and we discuss it. And during those discussions is where you really facilitate acceptable behavior, and because a lot of the topics are very passionate on both sides, and it's been harder recently, but kids get it. They understand a lot more than we think they do, and they're more willing. I believe they're more willing to be appropriate and respect everybody's opinions than adults are. So just modeling.
If I could jump in too, because I just want to say Todd is an incredibly humble person, and he does not sometimes recognize the value that this one assignment he does throughout the year, what effect it has for the students as they progress into high school. And as the students are talking about their topics, they sit in a circle, and a student has to stand up and present their topic and their opinion on it with strong reasons for their opinion. And then he facilitates the discourse between all the students, and he really models and pushes the kids to ask questions. Don't make a judgment. When they phrase something that may come off the wrong way, he then pushes that student. And he really forces them to be in a situation where not only are they defending what they believe with good, strong reasons, they're also being willing to ask for the other side and try to bring some understanding. And I would say that his other history teachers in the high school have noticed how that helps those students when they get to high school with those next level of topics, because they have that discourse and can handle it in the classroom.
And hopefully the kids bring that back to the adults in their lives. It's something that we can use on the community and even the national level.
I have a strong feeling that Todd is a favorite teacher. And I just have that. I'd like him for a teacher if I was a student.
They sometimes call him infamous.
Infamous Todd. So just we're going to wrap this up here, but anything outstanding that you've noticed this school year, academically or otherwise, as a mood in your school?
I would say this year was actually a bit of a turning point. People have jobs now where they did not have before, so that changes the feel within a school. So we went from a 50% poverty rate to a 36% poverty rate, because many of our students' parents are construction workers and work within the technical fields. And so that changes just the feel of the students, how they don't feel so hopeless for their futures. So that's an interesting shift. We've been so fortunate to work with 7B Culinary Arts and other organizations in the area to help provide free food to all our students. So our culinary arts program feeds our students a couple times a week for free. We have food laid out all the time. And we also have a food pantry outside the middle school that's recent, where anybody in the community may come in and add to the pantry or take from the pantry. So no student or community member is ever hungry. So that is an amazing development that's newish this year that I'm really proud of for our staff and our students to work towards. Jennifer, do you have anything else?
I was just going to say that I like Mary's phrasing of that a big shift, and I've seen an incredible shift for our faculty as well. Our high school teachers have worked so hard on their third trimester project and what they're bringing to the high school kids, and it's just wonderful to watch them collaborate and work together. And our middle school teachers have been doing the same thing, just finding ways that they can collaborate to bring the best items for our students, and they are loving it. They're having a great year.
Okay, well, to wrap this up, so we're into open enrollment now. Is that correct? And that lasts till how long?
March 21st.
Okay, so that means as this airs, we have about 8 days mm-hmm. for people that are interested, parents mm-hmm. that are interested to get their kids into open enrollment.
I would also say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just also want to make sure that if people miss that March 21st date, they can still come in and give us an application. It doesn't mean it's completely closed to them. It just means that they're not part of that initial lottery.
What do they do? They can do it online, or they have mm-hmm. to come in, or give us the process.
They can find the applications on the school's website. Again, it's forestbirdcharterschool.org. And don't forget there are two R's in Forest. They can also stop by the school if they want to pick up the application and ask some questions.
And that phone number you mentioned, folks can call and get a tour or set their children up for a shadowing day. What is that phone number?
The middle school phone number is 208-255-7771.
We understand that this charter school is very special in our community. We really appreciate your coming in today. That's Mary Jensen, administrator, Jennifer Grieve, principal, and Todd Clouch, social studies teacher. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys very much.
And that was our pre-recorded interview with the Forest Bird Charter School administrators and a social studies teacher. And we are back live. We just want to let you know about a few things. Tonight, a special interview with local singer-songwriter and musician Justin Landis. I'll be sitting down with him. He's bringing his guitar. He's going to be singing some songs and playing some tunes and also telling us about a couple of new music projects that he has going on. So that's 7 o'clock tonight during the Velma Hour. We're just going to preempt that automated system. And so, yeah, tune in at 7 p.m. tonight. We'd love to have you. Justin and I'll be here live, so tune in. Also, this is the morning show. We're really happy that you've been listening. We have a song for you queued up. And tomorrow, by the way, it will be Jim Healy for the Thursday edition of the morning show with Dinah Wall from the festival at Sandpoint. And I heard possibly ticket giveaways. That's all I know. So here you go, Beach Boys, Be True to Your School. We hope you have a beautiful day. Thank you.
When some loud bragger tries to